Good afternoon, everybody. So, kind of going to change gears a little bit. I'm a little different kind of speaker than all other people that have been up here, so y'all have to bear with me a little bit. First thing, I want to talk a little bit about IPM a little bit, but I got two things I'm thankful for. And one of those things is the people that I work with up here, Jeff Gore and Angus Catchott, David Kearns, all those guys, all of the data that you'll see today revolves around that Mid-South entomologist working group and the people that I work with, like Scott Stewart and Steve Brown, all those people, we work very closely together, and I'm very thankful for that. The second thing I'm thankful for is that I'm not a weed scientist. I mean, no offense, Larry, but you guys can't seem to get it together on that dicamba deal. Anyway, I'm just kidding, Larry. I'm just kidding. I saw you back. I couldn't help it. I'm sorry. I can't help it. But anyway, those are the things that I'm thankful for. And what I want to talk to you about today is, 2018 was pretty rough for a lot of our growers. It's pretty rough for us. Doing our research this year, the weather didn't agree with us. It was pretty tough out there. And as we transition into 2019, we got a lot of growers farming on a shoestring. Things are pretty tight out there. And that brings up the IPM to me. That's what IPM is all about, looking for ways that we can cut our cost for our grower and still maintain that insect control that we got to have to get our yields where we need them to be. So my talk is going to revolve around that kind of stuff. And just for our edification, I guess, let's talk about what IPM is. Integrated pest management is that's a big, long, wordy definition there. You can read it as good as I can. I can't hardly run with that. I couldn't even remember that if I needed to. So I got my own definition. Just use whatever you can and do whatever you got to do to control a pest or a group of pests the best you can. The correct definition, I guess, it's a little shorter, is, long-term focused application and using all those tools that you can to control those pests in that system. So, our goals there, and these are lofty goals. Mine is that second one there, reducing that cost of production for our producers the best way we can and still maintain that potential yield. We'd like to minimize our reliance on pesticides. And, that's what, when we got into this discussion about IPM, I get kind of frustrated every once in a while when I got folks that are out making automatic applications and doing those kind of silly things that you do, and I go like, IPM is dead, man. IPM is dead. Well, not really. It's really not. And when you get to looking at the things that we're doing, particularly in cotton, to control pests, I think we're doing a fairly decent job, overall. I really do. I think we're doing the things that we need to do. We're using some cultural practices. We plant early to avoid plant bugs. We try to conserve our beneficials as much as we can by using thresholds. We do the legal thing. You heard the guy up here before me talking about boll weevil eradication. We've got the weevil eradicated. We've made a lot of strides. We've made a little progress in IPM in Arkansas. But there's still some problems out there. And as we got into this working group, that I mentioned, all those folks, back a few years ago, several years ago, we got in discussions because Mississippi had a different threshold than we'd had in Arkansas, and Tennessee had a different one, Louisiana had a different threshold for various pests. And we said, the system, our region, the Mid-South region, is really not that different from state to state, and we could do a little better maybe if we work together as a group to help develop these thresholds and that kind of thing, and help our growers maintain that level of a cost efficiency that helps their bottom line, and that's what it's all about. So what I oftentimes get into is this, a lot of folks don't even know what an economic threshold really is, or and how it relates to the economic injury level. You know, the economic threshold is that population density at which you got to take action before you get to a point where you're losing money. And so when I got guys that come up to me or call me on the phone and they go, "Hey Gus, I got a half a threshold of plant bugs. Don't you think I ought to go ahead and treat?" Well, no. That's why we got a threshold. You know, our threshold is 3 per 5 row feet for plant bugs, or it's 9 per 25 for stink bugs in soybeans, or whatever it is. So if you got 3 or 4 stink bugs on 25 sweeps, do I think you ought to go ahead and treat? No. And there's a reason for that. And when you look at this graph, it basically points out that red line there is the pest population, and you see it increasing over time, and it reaches that economic or action threshold or economic threshold, and when it gets to that point, we take action. If we take action before that, then the cost outweighs the benefit. So once we cross that threshold, we take action to avoid that situation where we get economic injury level. And Jeff Gore made a better picture, and this is what happens out there in the real world. We get up towards that economic threshold, and if we don't take control, if we don't take action, then the population continues to increase and we start taking damage and the grower gets reduced yield because we didn't do what we were supposed to do. But when we take control at that point, then we save money for the grower, and the grower makes money, and he's got a smile on his face when he starts picking his cotton, and he's making money. There's problems with these economic injury levels. You know, a lot of them aren't really based on economics. We've started working in that direction. We have an action threshold in soybeans now that's based on not only the number of worms in the sack, but it also takes into account the cost of control and the value of the commodity. And those are the important components of a real dynamic threshold that you have to have to help that grower make money. It's all based on cost and price associated with that commodity. But one of the biggest limitations that we found as we got into this working together to develop a threshold in plant bugs was our inability to make an effective, accurate population estimate. Mississippi wanted to use a sweep net. We wanted to use a drop cloth. Who's wrong? Who's right? Well, it works out we were both right. If we use a sweep net early for plant bugs and we switch over at bloom to a shake sheet, that's the most effective way to estimate populations in plant bugs. And that represented the first work of our group of Mid-South entomologists working together to develop a sampling technique and a threshold that would help our growers make a little money. But it's the power of working together that made it happen. So as we move into 2019, I want to talk about a few things that we got going on. You know, we got insecticide and trait resistance. You heard the guys up here earlier today talking about the issues with the BT traits. We got tobacco thrips that are resistant to thymethoxam. We got plant bug management issues. I want to show you some data on that. And then bollworms. You know, you heard a lot about bollworms today and the problems that we're seeing with managing bollworms. And then how does IPM fit in with all that? So tobacco thrips, definitely confirmed resistance with thymethoxam. And by all indications that we've seen in the last couple of years in my test, it looks like imidacloprid's right behind it. I think we're seeing tolerance developing to that. They're both in the same class, so it only goes to figure. But we've got issues there. So if we're looking for ways to control thrips, because thrips are a very, very important part of our cotton production system. They're the second most economic pest that we have. We spend more money on thrips and the damage that they cause is extremely important to us to getting off to a good start. If we don't manage them, we get late season cotton, we get delayed maturity, and we get some yield loss. So what do? There's some infer sprays or granulars. We looked at alternative seed treatments. We hadn't had a lot of luck with all the alternatives that are out there, so I kind of scratched it off the list. There are some differences in varietal selection, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. But certainly there's some things that we can do, those IPM type things, minimum tillage, that kind of stuff that helps lower thrips pressures. And this is ag logic. This is the old Aldicarb, the Timic, that we used to use and we got away from when the seed treatments came back online. This is in my test. This is what ag logic looks like on my cotton. What do you see there? You see a very healthy cotton plant. The leaves are fully expanded, look good, very healthy compared to that. That's not where we want to be with thrips control when you start seeing that wrinkled up black terminal. So there's some possibilities there. And when you look at our data, this is that alternative to Neonics, and you can see all the products there that we're testing. And you see the control there. If you look at the bottom, the thrips lowers are not lowest with the Ag Logic at 3.5 and 5 pounds. This is another study in 2017. And now you're seeing some stuff like some in-furrows like Admire Pro added with Gaucho that are giving some control. But primarily what you see is the Ag Logic, the in-furrows like Admire and Acephate are providing a level of control, and it carries out to yield. So you see that sometimes you get a pretty good yield bump with the control that you get with both the in-furrows. All the in-furrows look very good in that test. This is a study I did in 2017 on a grower in southeast Arkansas that had a root knot problem. We had strips across the field with Aldicarb and a seed treatment side by side. And you can see I got a 400-pound yield increase with Ag Logic. This is 2018. Not so much. No big yield increase with it this previous year. So sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. If you got growers that are considering going to Ag Logic, there's some real advantages with this product. It's superior thrips control, and I mean it's a lot better. In my opinion, when I look at all my trials, we're also getting nematode suppression. And most importantly, it reduces the incidence of a lot of our secondary type pests like mites and aphids and that kind of thing. So it has some real advantages, but it also has some disadvantages, and you can see them there. Everybody knows the problems associated with a granular in furrow. You got to get it set up. A lot of planters aren't set up for it, so growers are having to adjust and build planters just so they can put out Aldicarb. The toxicity issue is more of a situation today than it was 20 years ago, and a lot of growers have serious concerns for the people that work for them having to handle this product. The cost is kind of high. It's a little bit higher than most of the other stuff that's out there. And we've had some issues with dependability and getting the supply of the product that we need in Arkansas. So maybe it fits you, maybe it doesn't. But it is certainly an alternative. So in 2019, our thrips recommendation is going to be a minimum. Start with imidacloprid-based seed treatment or an in-furrow spray or both. Add supplemental seed treatments or components like Orthene seed treatment works pretty good. We like what we see with it. If Aldicarb works for you, consider it. But consider supplemental foliar applications, and this is what I get. My cotton looks thrippy. Don't you think I ought to go ahead and spray? Well, do you have thrips? No, I can't find them, but it looks thrippy. That's not very IPM-ish, is it? Let's spray when we need to spray and don't spray when we don't. That's the bottom line. But planting in favorable conditions helps us a whole lot. When we hit the right temperature and that cotton jumps up out of the ground, it'll outrun those thrips. A lot of cotton in 2018 jumped out of the ground and just outran the thrips, and we didn't have that big a issue on a lot of fields just because they hit the right growing conditions and the cotton grew up and got around it. Let's talk about plant bugs a little bit. So obviously it's the most important pest of cotton in the Mid-South for us, and we averaged in Arkansas about 4 to 5 applications last year for plant bugs across the state. So we're spending a lot of money on plant bugs, and we got to find some ways that we can reduce that number of applications. So what we found out about the tarnished plant bug in that sampling and threshold study that I showed you a minute ago was that sweep net's best to assess plant bug populations prior to bloom. That black shake sheet is by far and away the best after bloom. And evaluating square retention is, in my opinion, just as important as the number of plant bugs that you find in your sack or on your shake sheet. Evaluating square retention, you can't deny the need to do that. So our threshold is 9 to 12 per 100 sweeps pre-bloom and 3 to 5 mid-season on. And then we'll cut it back from there. I know this is a busy slide, but I want to show you this is a regional trial that we've been doing the last few years in the Mid-South. And what you got across the bottom are most of the products that are currently labeled or used for plant bug control in the Mid-South. So you got Transform, Centric, Vidate, Orthene across. You can see what the products are. And what I've done here is I've got bars that show after application on 4 and 7 days. That's the blue and the red bar. And then we sprayed a second time, and that's the green bar is 4 days, 7 days, and 11 days after the second application. So as you look across that list of insecticides there, and look at that red line that represents 6 per 10 or 3 per 5, which is our threshold, what do you see? Well, if you look at the check, you see we had pretty good plant bug pressure. We're up to about 65 plant bugs on 10 row feet. So that's about 10 times threshold, right? And then you look at Transform. Got in a little trouble at 7 days, but basically it kept that population under that threshold for all the other observations in there. But look at Centric and Vidate and Orthene and Brigade and Bidrin and Admire Pro and Carbine. And Diamond. Now, Diamond looks pretty good too, doesn't it? It looks pretty good. It got a little blip there early. But that's what we know about Diamond. It's an insect growth regulator. It works slow. So it took a little time to get it started. But by the time you got that second application on there, we kept those plant bugs under threshold for quite a bit of time. And so what this tells me is we got a couple of products that are helping us pretty good. But that's about it. So, one of the things that I tell growers when we get in the heat of the season and the plant bugs are popping, single product applications just aren't effective for controlling plant bugs when they're bad. And it also tells me we need more modes of action. We need some more stuff. We need new stuff. Something that's going to help us control these plant bugs better than what we're getting right here. We do this because we can show this to EPA and say, hey, we need help. We get a new chemical out there. We need all the help we can get. We're going to do whatever we got to do to get it online because it's obvious from this we're putting a lot of pressure on Transform right now. So one of the other things that we see oftentimes when populations are really bad, growers just don't like to spray more than once a week. They just don't like it. They don't want to shorten that time interval. And so one of the things that we do is try to get them to shorten that time interval to really knock plant bug in the head and keep those numbers below threshold. And so what I got here is a little trial that we're doing in the Mid-South, and we're looking at that blue bar up there at the top. That's untreated, and you can see the numbers very similar to the last study you saw, big numbers. And then I got a single application on the red line, and then a gray, that's another single application that's a tank mix of Orthene and Transform. It's kind of like you're going on vacation, and you know you're not going to be back for a while as a grower, and the grower says, just tell me what I can spray so I can knock them out for a while so I don't have to worry about it. It's called the vacay treatment. Okay? And then you got applications at 4 days apart, 7 days apart, and 11 days apart. And so to take it out, the noise out of there, I took the untreated check out in this slide. And what I'm looking for is a treatment or a combination of treatments that are going to help me keep that plant bug number below that dotted line. Okay? So let's look and see what's working. Well, let's look at what's not working, because that's pretty obvious. If you look at that red line, we knocked them down at 3 days after, but by 7 days after, we're right at threshold, and by the 16th of July, we're creeping up above, and then we hit the 19th of July, and all hell breaks loose, and the population gets away from us. It's gone. Let's look at the vacay treatment, the single application on July the 5th, and you look at it, and that's that gray line there. And we knocked them down a little bit early, but by the 16th of July, we're well above threshold, and you can see it's the next one down from the red one. They got away from us. Now look at the dual application, the two applications, whether it's 4, 7, or 11 days apart. That 11-day, that green line, we'd have been better off if we'd have treated a little earlier. Wouldn't you agree? We got way above that threshold, and we brought it back down, but there was a two-week period there, pretty much, where we had thresholds above where we wanted them to be. But you look at the blue line and the other line that's 7 days apart, and all those two treatments provided the level of control and gave us more control over that period of time to get us by those plant bugs. And this is how the yields fell out on that. The two applications are obviously up at the top. The single applications and untreated are going towards the bottom. There's a new product coming out. We're excited. Now, there's a new trait, a Ligus transgenic, and we've been evaluating this technology for a couple of years, and I just want to show you some data from last year, and we're looking maybe at 2020, 2021 before this product comes out, but it's certainly coming, and you need to be aware of it and how much impact it makes. First of all, I don't have any data on thrips. But the exciting part about this technology is it's not only a Ligus trait, it also contains thrips. It keeps them under control. That's a big deal, because if we don't have to make those foliar applications to control thrips, that keeps us out of those mite issues that we got in northeast Arkansas. Oh my God, the mite population in northeast Arkansas and the Boot Hill of Missouri was so bad last year, we had people up there treating 4 or 5 times to get mites under control. That cotton comes out of the ground with mites on it. Literally, comes out of the ground, it's got mites on it. And so we got to find some ways to reduce. If you want to make mites bad, put some asphate out. Spray that field for thrips and put some acephate out and blow those mites up. That's what you do. So we're looking for ways that'll help us, and I think this is one. And you can see it, the blue bar here is the conventional. The red bar is the transgenic. And you can see in the unsprayed how much difference we have in population between that transgenic and the conventional cotton side by side. So it's not a bulletproof. It's not a silver bullet. Obviously, because I'm above threshold. You see my red line there. I'm above threshold, but I'm quite a bit lower in numbers, about 8 plant bugs on 10 row feet compared to about 25. That's a pretty good level of control, I think. I like what I see. And there across I've got where I sprayed at 1X threshold, which is 3 per 5 or 6 per 10, and then 2X threshold, double it, and then a weekly spray across there. And we sprayed it for several times, and you can see what the applications were. But this is 10 days after we had sprayed the 1X threshold. And this is 8 days after a 1X threshold and a 22 days after a second threshold. So you can see quite a bit of difference between those treatment levels and the transgenic and how it's working for us. And there's the yield. Consistently across all those treatments, we had a pretty good yield bump associated with the transgenic compared to the conventional. Pretty good. So there's a lot of hope there for giving us some tarnished plant bug. But these are the things, the IPM things that we do, insecticide selection, rotate chemistry. Am I out of time?
I'm going to give you 3 more minutes.
All right. So spray intervals, consider diamond. I think it's an important part of this thing. And then that threshold, terminating our sprays at 250, that's the things that we do to control plant bugs. Now here's the issue that we talked about earlier. And obviously corn is driving this problem that we got with BT resistance. And you look at the homogeny of the traits across corn and cotton, it doesn't take you long to figure out what the issue is. And this is some of my data from 2018. And so we got a sprayed and unsprayed, but what you're looking at is a conventional on the left-hand side over there, and then wide strike 3, twin link plus, Bogard 2, Bogard 3. As we go through the season, I've drawn the red line that represents 6% fruit damage. As we get into the next week, what we're looking at, we're 6 days after application. I didn't bring the threshold below that threshold in my conventional or wide strike, either one. You heard about wide strike. It's not very effective on. But look at wide strike 3, look at twin link plus, and look at the Bogard 3, regardless of whether I sprayed it. And you heard the FMC guy up here today say, regardless of trait technology, we're going to recommend spraying on a 20-25% egg threshold. Not me. I'm not going to spray Bogard 3 or twin link plus unless I hit that 6% fruit level of damage. Our 3-gene cotton is still holding up. And you can see it here as you go across. The 3-gene cotton is holding up compared to the 2-gene cotton. But we're sustaining a lot of damage regardless of even spraying wide strike. We're still getting damage in those plots. And there's the yields associated with this test. And you can see we get a yield increase just about every time where we sprayed compared to where we didn't spray. You heard Jeff earlier talk about, somebody asked about the 14 and the 20 ounce. Maybe it was you. Okay, so this is a typical test for me that I've seen the last 3 years, and this is conventional cotton. And what I want to point out is the damage levels. This is fruit damage. In the untreated check, I'm running about 24% damage in the untreated check. That's what the bifenthrin's doing for us. It doesn't even separate from the untreated control. It's not providing any level of control. Now look at the 14 versus the 20 ounce, and notice I'm 23 days after application here. But this is what I see with Prevathon at 14 and 20 ounces every year. I see a remarkable impact of 6 ounces additional Prevathon rather than the 14 ounce. There's no denying it. It's there, and it's the only treatment in that test that's got them below threshold at 23 days after application. That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for something that's going to provide that level of control for my producers that they don't have to go back and make a second application unless it's completely necessary. So is it time to make that transition to 3-gene cotton? Well, it'd be great if we could, but this is the data that Jeff showed earlier. You see a 109-pound difference between dual-gene versus 3-gene, and that pays for a lot of Prevathon applications. This is my data from Arkansas If Bill Robertson's here, I got Lone Oak and Ashley County, and I'm looking at the top three dual genes versus the top three triple genes, and I got 150-pound yield loss when I go to a three-gene product in Lone Oak and a 268-pound difference in Ashley County. So I can spray, I can pay for a lot of applications, supplemental foliar applications over the top of that cotton and still make money for my producer. The three gene products aren't, the yield level is not good enough at this point, in my opinion, for my growers to make that transition to three gene cotton. The control is there, but the yield's not there. And the bottom line is yield, right? Everybody nod your head, please. Thank you. So you heard Angus and them talk about thresholds. These are our thresholds for 2019. Nothing new there. We're going to treat on that egg threshold for some of our producers. When we get to that point on dual gene products or conventional, I don't care. We're going to make that application when we need to. But you got to make your variety choice based on yield potential rather than trait, in my opinion, when it comes to insects. And that's what we're going to do. All right? He's giving me the big push. But I got a couple of real comments on IPM up here. One is very eloquent. Why IPM? Why do we need to consider IPM? And Chief Seattle said it a lot better than I said. I said IPM is good. So, that's all I got.